The Volume.
Welcome to the Best of the Colin Cowherd Podcast. Some great guests this week. We're giving you all the highlights, but first, my takes of the week that was. I think USC should go get an NFL coach. I think name, image, likeness is going to be a little bit of an avalanche for the next decade. And these NFL coaches are not control freaks. They've dealt with players getting paid. They're very comfortable with it. They've got owners in the NFL. They're not in the I have to control everything business. I said Doug Peterson to me, Matt Nagy, if the Bears fired him, Anthony Lynn, all won playoff games in the NFL, all have a presence. If you go look at USC, Miami, and UCLA, three urban universities, if you look at the coaches that have had the most success, Pete Carroll, John Robinson, USC, pro coaches. Chip Kelly, pro coach, is getting it rolling. Dick Vermeil, UCLA, pro coach. How about Miami? Last time they won, Butch Davis, Dennis Erickson, Jimmy Johnson. When you get to these big distracted cities, you need a big presence to cut through. I always said this about Georgetown basketball. When USC was at its best, I remember Kirk Herbstreit saying to me, he goes, when I go to USC games, it's college, but not just college. It feels like somewhere between the NFL and college. And that's what the Miami Hurricanes felt like. And that's what the Georgetown Hoyas felt like with Ewing and Iverson and David Wingate and Reggie Williams, Alonzo Mourning, Georgetown in DC. It was a college basketball program, but it had the attitude and the intimidation and personality of a pro team. So did USC with Pete Carroll. So did Miami with Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson. This is not rural America. These are distracted markets. There's pro sports everywhere. You got to cut through. And I just think in Los Angeles right now, every college football reporter has the same names. James Franklin's not getting this job. He's making $8.5 million a year at Penn State. You'd have to buy him out for $4 million. So that's $4 million in a buyout. He would have wanted at least $10 to $12 million to coach USC to make the money right because LA is so expensive. His staff would be $8 to $10 million. USC is not going to pay $25 million for a coach. They're not going to write that check. They're also in Los Angeles, not going to let somebody walk in and control the program. Doesn't work that way. This is not Ames, Iowa. You know, this is not a small town where, you know, Nick Saban can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. That's fine in Alabama. You know, that's not going to work here. And so I think there are these very unique college cities, Miami, Los Angeles, where you have to attack it differently. And DC with Georgetown, you got to attack it differently. And I hope USC thinks big, but God, if I have to see Chris Peterson ain't taking the job, doesn't want it. Told me that. Bob Stoops has been offered three or four jobs. He's not doing it. James Franklin, USC is not going to let a guy come in and just control the athletic department. He's a control guy. Most of these college guys, they have to have the secretary. They have to have the budgets. That's just not what USC is going to do. Also right now, if I was a college coach, I'd use USC to get a raise at my school. I mean, the Pac-12 television contract right now is a mess. It's a mess. USC is highly political. Yeah, it's not a perfect job. It's not 1990. It's not Pete Carroll's LA when you had no NFL in town. You have to win, and you have to win a certain way. And frankly, the demands are intense. And the minute you lose a game, people are uninterested. You don't get the guaranteed 92,000 home field advantage. It's not the way it works in LA. People have other things to do. I've always said this. Whenever you have a beach, Miami and LA, it's like adding another pro team. It's just another option that's fun that people can go to. I mean, what else are you going to do in Auburn, Alabama? Tallahassee, Florida? Gainesville, Florida? I mean, what else are you going to do? 90% of college football powers are in the middle of nowhere. It's the only game in town. USC, the minute you go on a two-game losing streak, your revenue drops through the floor. Do you see the Coliseum Saturday? There was nobody in it. Third quarter, nobody in it. So you gotta cut through. You gotta get a big personality. You gotta get an NFL guy. Go big. God, college football was so much bigger years ago. Miami, Pete Carroll, Lou Holt. It feels so insular now. I mean, we basically know who's playing in the national championship Final Four now. You know, write the teams down. I think USC needs to lead the way. California is the fifth biggest economy in the world. It leads the way for our country in tech innovation, in agriculture. One of the top manufacturing states, in aerospace. Why can't we lead it in college sports? Football teams have never been refined in September. Andy Reid, Sean McVay, Matt Nagy, offensive coaches. They spend off-season scheming new plays. So I do think offensive coaches have an advantage over defensive coaches in September. Defenses are rarely in great form early. There's a long time baseball saying on opening day, pitchers are ahead of hitters. The belief is that hitters perform worse at the beginning of the season, therefore pitchers perform better at the beginning of the season. Last week, the biggest numbers were put up by the Saints, Sean Payton, Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury, Eagles, Nick Sirianni, Niners, Kyle Shanahan, Rams, Sean McVay. September is for offensive coaches. Consider that when gambling. He's not high profile like Cam Newton. He doesn't have endorsements. But it's remarkable to me how we always forget about Nick Foles, who outdueled Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, who has a career record over 500. In fact, with Philadelphia, when he had decent offensive line protection and a smart offensive coach, he was 21-11 and a passer rating above 93. He's played in 6 playoff games. He's won 4, 11 TDs, 5 picks, and a 99 passer rating. Nick Foles has always been as good as his surrounding protection and coaching. Nick Foles, I'm not building my franchise around him. My argument is he's absolutely, and has been for the last several years, the best backup quarterback in the NFL. He's starting his 13th year on NBC's Football Night in America. It's been a great privilege to know Tony Dungy, one of the most ethical and decent guys I've ever known. And I just love chatting to him. He's really smart. Tony, I talked to Peyton Manning recently. He was so funny. I said, when there was a view that, you know, you ran the offense and Tony ran the defense and he was the head coach. And I said, did you and Tony, you know, tell me the first time you and Tony locked horns. And he told a funny story. He goes, he came to me. He said, Peyton, stop throwing interceptions right now.
I don't know if I put it exactly that way, but we did have a discussion, and I said, hey, Peyton, we are an explosive offense. We're going to continue to be explosive, but we've got to take care of the football. If we take care of the football, we're going to be a championship team. And he didn't understand that totally. He didn't grasp it, and it came slowly but surely. And 2002 was my first year there. Kind of bought into it a little bit. 2003, 2004, he goes 49 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. That's when it clicked, and that's when we became a team you had to be reckoned with.
You know, it is interesting because, Tony, I like guys. Tom Brady, he'll throw picks. Eli Manning, Big Ben, Brett Favre. What is the line, Tony, where you don't want to dissuade a talent like Lamar Jackson? I want him to run. He may fumble occasionally. Like, what's the line for you as a coach? What you'll tolerate and what'll drive you nuts?
The line is you can't turn the ball over. You can't. You've got to take care of the football. And that's what you've got to get across to them. Interceptions are going to happen. Fumbles are going to happen. But everybody's got to take that when it does happen, it's a catastrophe. It's not, hey, it's okay. And yeah, we took some shots. And so we lost the ball here. It's no big deal. It is a big deal. And when you get to that point and it's important, that's when you're going to be good. And all of the great quarterbacks have that.
The NFL is back, and FanDuel Sportsbook wants you to get the most out of every play. That's why they're giving everybody a $10 risk-free bet every week. All you have to do is bet a same-game parlay bet with three legs or more. And if your bet doesn't win, FanDuel pays you back up to $10. Same-game parlays, I like them a lot. I think the Ravens have a chance to upset the Chiefs this week. Keep your eye on that number. Lamar over on the rushing yards. Keep an eye on the defensive health of the Chiefs. Honey Badger Frank Clark. If they're out, you can run on this team. Same game parlay. Look for that. The same game parlay icon to know what markets are eligible for same game parlays. FanDuel, easy to use. America's number one sports book. No feeling like nailing a same-game parlay bet. New to FanDuel Sportsbook? They're offering a $1,000 bet if you prefer that. Sign up, promo code Colin. First bet loses. Get up to $1,000 back in site credit. That's promo code Colin. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, Jersey, Virginia, and West Virginia. New users only. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. $150 max bonus. See all terms at sportsbookfanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, or Virginia, or 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia.
You know, at the college level, Tony, coaches have control. They control the personnel. Nick Saban's personality, to me, is more controlling. It's a better fit in the college than it is in the NFL. You know, Belichick has control, Pete Carroll does, but they've also had sort of odd drafts. Bills really struggled at some positions in the draft. Pete's missed on some first rounders, several. You could have worked in college, but you always felt like a pro coach where control wasn't that valuable to you. Go back to your career. Because I see a lot of these coaches now. All college coaches want control. But some of these NFL guys, they want more say in personnel. Heck, Aaron Rodgers now says he wants say in personnel. I'm not a fan of that. What, you tell me, did it matter to you? How did you and Polian make it work?
People ask that question all the time, especially lately. You know, who had control of the draft? Who had the final say? Who had the final say on the 53? I honestly don't know, Colin. I'm sure Bill did, but, you know, we would have discussions. And I knew Bill was not going to draft a player that I didn't want. I was not going to keep a guy on the team that Bill didn't want. We had a great capacity to listen to each other, to feel things out and work together. And that's what you have to have. And it was a partnership. And I don't understand this. You know, I've got to be right. It's got to be my way. I've got to have control. When I started coaching in 1981, Chuck Knoll, I went into his office and I said, what am I supposed to do? I've never coached before. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. And he said, your job is to help your players play better. And it was so simple, but that is the formula. And so I always felt that way. I don't have to have control. I have to help my players play better. Now, Bill Polian and Rich McKay before that, to their credit, they got to know what kind of players would flourish well under me. And so, hey, don't draft the player that needs a full-time babysitter. Don't draft the player that's not motivated. That's not what Tony's good at. He's going to coach him. He's going to work him. He's going to help him. But certain types of guys are going to flourish here. Certain types of guys aren't. And once we understood that, we were in great shape.
There's a bunch of young quarterbacks. Some will play immediately. Some, like Trey Lance, have a better situation. They can slowly be kind of moved and into the offense. What, as a fan, that's what I am in the end. I'm a broadcaster, but I'm a fan. When you looked at young quarterbacks, what was an early sign, either they were yours or you were facing them, an early sign that, oh, that's a little bit of a problem. This isn't going to work. Or the opposite. Oh, he does that well. Are there traits, Tony, that are problematic that you spot that just historically in your 35, 40 years, like if a guy can't do blank, it's not going to work?
I always felt there were two things NFL quarterbacks needed. They needed, number one, they need poise and the ability to filter everything out and do what they do in the high pressure situations. And then number two, they need accuracy. I remember I played on the 49er team when Joe Montana was a rookie, and he came in and you saw that he was so cool and calm and collected. And then every ball was right between the numbers. And so even when he wasn't playing, and you said, man, this guy, he's got that. He's got the poise. He's got the accuracy. So you look at Peyton Manning, Brady, you know, all the great ones. They have that. They can put the ball right where they want it, and they have poise. Now, you can see a quarterback who's got a lot of other things. When they're not accurate or they tend to get rattled, then you say, I don't know if he's going to be a great NFL quarterback.
So I said this. I've been a huge defender of Lamar Jackson. And one of the things I've said is, listen, he cares so deeply. He's not perfect. Okay, Eli and Brady couldn't move. I'm not looking for perfect. But he's never distracted. His body has changed. He cares so much about winning and losing. And I wonder if you coached him, would it? He's a playmaker. My argument is, okay, he's not a great up-the-sideline thrower, but nobody else can move like him. Would you ever be uncomfortable with the times he runs or the hits he takes? How would you feel about Lamar Jackson?
No, he's going to learn, and he's so super competitive that he is running into traffic. He's taking hits that he doesn't have to take, and he'll learn not to do that. But I would love to coach Lamar Jackson and have him be my quarterback. He gives the defense so much headache. There's things you can't do against Lamar Jackson on defense. He may not have the super accuracy that I'm looking for, but his mobility more than makes up for that. So, I think he's going to be special. I think he's going to win a Super Bowl before he's finished.
Aqib Talib stopping by today, the multiple-time Pro Bowler. Got a Super Bowl. Let's bring him in. All right, Aqib Talib. So let's first address Cleveland, Kansas City. And, you know, Aqib, sometimes fans don't think about, adjustments and halftime adjustments. So Cleveland, with excellent play calling, had the Chiefs totally on their heels.
Right.
And then they came out in the second half, far more aggressive. And then Cleveland got a little conservative. And it's a different ballgame. But it when I watched it, you know, my takeaway was, that's a tough spot for Cleveland. They don't have a winning franchise. They lead at halftime. This is the most dynamic offense. And I thought Cleveland got a little conservative in the second half with their play calling. What was your takeaway?
I mean, I think it's hard not to get conservative when you got those backs, right? It's hard with that O-line and them backs. If I'm up like the Browns was up, how can I not get conservative, right? That's kind of what we was doing to get to this point. Play actions. Faking it like we was going to get to these guys. So, man, it's just hard to beat the Chiefs, man. It's they can score like this. You had the box punt, you know what I'm saying, and gave them the short field. So it's just hard to beat the Chiefs, but I think Cleveland played it right.
Arizona-Tennessee. My big concern with Ryan Tannehill was this, is that his career, you know, he was kind of flailing, and then he got Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, and – you know, listen, coordinators matter. You're talented enough that a coordinator isn't going to change the trajectory of Aqib Talib's career. But for a quarterback that's solid, if you get a McVay or a Shanahan or maybe an Arthur Smith, it changes the trajectory of your career. So he leaves and he takes the Atlanta Falcons job. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to win immediately as a head coach, but he was a hell of a coordinator. And when I watched Tennessee today, maybe it was the lack of returning starters. Maybe it was just Kyler Murray getting in a lead and putting pressure on them. Like, what jumped out to you?
Really, I thought it was Arizona stopped the run. They did a good job stopping Derrick Henry early. He didn't have big runs to, I think, like third quarter, maybe. He had too many big runs. So I give credit to that Cardinals defense, man. Xavier Collins was in there. Isaiah Simmons was moving around everywhere. Chandler Jones, J.J. Watt came and played the hell out the run. So you really could see the change in their defense. So throw J.J. Watt on that D-line, you know you're going to be able to stop the run. So I think that's what the difference was. Arizona was stopping Derrick Henry. And you know, it made him do other things.
Do you like Kyler Murray?
I love Kyler Murray, man. I love Kyler Murray. Put on another show today. This Cardinal team is special, Colin. You see, I keep on talking about these Cardinals. They special. They got something going. I think they've been right there on the cusp. But, you know, as he played with Kingsbury, and it's their third year together. I think, you know, they on their way now. They finally turned that corner, and Kyler's special. This is going to be an MVP-type season for Kyler, I think.
Finally, best team you saw, including Tampa Dallas Thursday, best team you saw, and we're doing this before the Bears-Rams, so I want to say that. Best team you saw this weekend, and why?
Well, I would say Tampa, but I thought that kind of, you know, he put a little pressure on that secondary. I thought that secondary played a little bit better, but Dak is proven. He turned in that corner, man. Dak doing something for real. So that took Tampa off. I got to ride with Arizona. I'm going to ride with the Cardinals. I think their defense came out. They stopped Derrick Henry. And the safeties didn't have to really get involved in it. They kind of stopped them with the guys up front. J.J. Watt, Isaiah Simmons, and, you know, the young guy, Zaven Collins. So I think they did a good job on defense. We know what they got on offense. Hop came out, did his thing like regular. Kyler Murray came out, did his thing like regular. But I think that defense stepped up, got a turnover today, couple turnovers a day. Chandler Jones went crazy. He showed he back. He want that check as well. So I got to ride with Arizona, man. They jumped off the tape to me.
Think about them. Buda Baker, Chandler Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, Kyler Murray, A.J. Green. That's like six elite players in this league. If right. A.J.'s healthy, that's as many as Seattle has.
And they might have a couple in 6 years. They going to be around there. The Isaiah Simmons and Collins, and they got and Rondale Moore. They got a couple guys who could be like that. You know, Kyler Murray. You know what I'm saying? They got some young names who in 6 years could be those guys.
All right, here he is, Chad Millman, Chief Content Officer of the Action Network. And the way this game works is I give you my take on it, and you say sharp or square, and then give me what you would do. So let's start with this. I like the Chargers. It's now -3.5. I like them before. I like them more now without DeMarcus Lawrence, easily the best Cowboy defensive player. Is that the fact that the Washington defense really got no pressure on Justin Herbert, and now the Cowboys bring in a defensive front without their best player, tells me that Justin Herbert at home is going to have a lot of time to throw the football. He was remarkable on third down last week. Bizarrely good, 74% against the Washington defense. And it should be noted, a defensive-leaning staff that had more than a week to prepare for them. Dallas has a more offensive-minded staff. I'm going to take the Chargers, preferably at -3, but even if it's -3.5, sharp or square.
So the Chargers are a sharp play, but they were a sharp play when this game opened at 2.5.
Yes.
And now it was bet up to 3. It was bet up to 3.5. At 3.5 is not a sharp play anymore. It's just the side that everybody is playing, and they've been playing it more aggressively since the news about the defensive lineman whose name I just forgot.
DeMarcus Lawrence,
I think. Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence. And since the news about him came out, Michael Gallup not playing, there have been some injuries on that team in the span of the 24 to 48 hours just in the last couple of days. That's why it's no longer a sharp side at 3.5. Personally, I'm not going to play it anymore because there's an old axiom in betting, get the best of the number. And oftentimes, if you like a side, but the number has moved so far, especially over a key number like 3, and you missed it, you don't bet it, because then that's going to come back to bite you in the long run. Right. So I like the Chargers in this game. I won't bet it because I don't like the number anymore.
Interesting game I feel strongly about. I don't like favorites generally. I would take the Steelers -5 hosting the Raiders. Raiders on a short week. I really think what Pittsburgh was able to do, which was completely unravel a more than capable Buffalo offense at home. We forget the Steelers were a dominant defensive unit last year until they fell apart. We were reminded in the opening week at Buffalo just how dominant and relentless they are. Raiders in a short week. I don't even know if they're particularly well coached. I feel like there are two-person offense with Derek Carr and Waller. The Steelers were able to, by committee, shut down Stephon Diggs. I would take the Steelers a favorite to cover here, sharp or dull.
Sharp, very sharp, right side, 100%. The defense is fierce, no doubt about it. What was interesting about that Bills game, and you and I both like the Steelers, you and I both like the Steelers to win in that game. Ben Roethlisberger in the second half of that game, they had a lot of troubles in the first half with offense. In the second half of that game, he played like a savvy veteran. And when they needed to have plays made, third downs, you weren't worried that Ben Roethlisberger was going to turn the ball over. And that's how they won the game. They were methodical. They got the right plays. They had the right turnover from special teams. I thought they were just incredibly, really well coached in that game. Great spot for Mike Tomlin that last week. That's the only thing that scares me about this week is Mike Tomlin is amazing when he's got to rah-rah his team. He's less amazing when his team is favored and they're supposed to win.
Okay, I'm going to throw one at you. You talked me out of betting the Seahawks last week.
Did I?
Yeah,
you did. I think I did. No, I think I did. That's right.
That's right. So yeah. I have a rule that well-coached teams that are good, not bad teams, but capable, well-coached teams, when they play poorly or are humiliated, always bounce back. The Colts not only lost, they were pushed all over the field. The Rams are a good team. This is Stafford's first road game. They're feeling very good about themselves. The number was 4. It's now 3.5. I would take a well-coached, talented team and the points if it's over 3 against the Rams, who we all now love. They're a little overvalued. It was the Bears. Sharp or square?
It is so sharp. I feel like I'm watching a Ronco commercial and you are selling me knives. That is how sharp it is. This is exactly the side you want to be on. I love this game. I love the Colts in this game. I betted at 4. I think 3.5 is still good. There's a stat. Home underdogs coming off of a loss since 2005 in week 2. Home dogs, 63% against the spread.
Ooh.
When the spread is 6 or less. The Colts fit directly into that system. That is a nice size data set. And agree with everything you said. This is one where the market meets the analysis on the field, right? And so for me, that's 100% sharp play.
That's all for this week. Got a great week coming up. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram.
The Volume.